sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Tawn Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be getting right back to your calls and questions following our top of the hour feature. That number to call 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Wanted to start at the top of the hour and talk about container gardening. Tawn, there are just so many people who have smaller spaces. They either live in condos or townhomes and just don't have the space that many of us have with larger yards to grow things, but yet there are so many options available. If you go to Amazon now, you can find all sorts of grow bags. Like, you can find these 50-gallon grow bags that you can fill and garden in.
There are many options that are very inexpensive. I think Amazon has been something that has opened up selection, but it's also been a great equalizer on price. There's always something you can afford, but you know, I don't want to discount local retailers, local garden centers, because they also have many useful things that you can just show up and purchase.
Right. Many beautiful containers as well. But the grow bags I've mainly seen sold online, which is why I mentioned those. And a lot of people are using them because they're portable.
You can take the soil out and just fold it up and then go get more soil the next year if you don't want them out there. And so there's so many options. You can build your own, you can purchase containers, and no matter what you're using, if you're following good principles, then you are going to have success. And it's just when you don't follow those few principles that no matter the container, that you're going to run into problems.
Right, and you still have to have sunlight. So when they are thinking about putting out these containers and growing vegetables or whatever in them, how much sunlight do they need?
At least 6 hours, preferably 8 hours of sunlight for vegetables are going to be what you need for the daily. And then you're going to need them in a location that you have access to water.
Right. Water is going to be a big thing.
It is.
Or you're going to be hand watering them, which is fine as you plan to make that commitment.
You are roped to them just like a brand new puppy or a swimming pool, because it's going to take daily maintenance. And so on the containers, a couple of other things that they need to be aware of are that they don't want to use soil from their yard inside the container.
Big no-no. Why?
It is. Because
it turns into concrete, for one thing.
It does. It's heavy. It doesn't drain well. The reason your soil drains well when it's in your, just the native soil drains well in your garden and under your grass, is that there's such a amount of it that gravity is able to pull the water down basically toward the center of the earth. And when it hits bedrock, it eventually, you know, does whatever it's going to do. Mm-hmm. But that soil above ground has different characteristics. And so the reason we're using potting soils or raised bed mix is because they are very well drained and they can support plant life above ground to where your native soil wouldn't.
Okay, potting soils are not all made alike. What should people
look
for?
They are not. And I don't want to get into brands, but
you don't want a lot of filler stuff in there.
No, you don't. Well, I will say some brands that if you can find them that I've had very good success with, actually Fertilome makes some really good potting soils. And then Sunshine, which is sometimes, I think, sold as Sun Gold, but Sunshine makes great potting soils. And then I've used a lot of Lambert products, and we've had really good luck with Lambert soils. And so those are three that I like. But those are also only usually available from independent garden centers. If you are in a box store, Jiffy sometimes makes some good ones, but that one that kind of sounds like Iroquois is the one I actually avoid, because I found that it's expensive and it usually isn't very good. It has stones and sticks and a few things like that. And so I don't want to disparage anybody, but Lambert, Jiffy, at least what I've used of Jiffy, Sungrow, and the Fertilome are the ones that I've had really good success with.
Okay, we talked about sun, we talked about water. We didn't talk about drainage, because the bags, for instance, that I mentioned, they don't have drainage. So what do you need to make sure that you're paying attention to when you don't have drainage?
If those bags, some of them I've seen, I believe, have semi-porous sites where water doesn't leak out, but it evaporates through almost like a clay pot.
Okay.
All of them won't do that. And so you have to be super careful on your irrigation. And it may be, you know, I hate to start putting holes in bags, but it may be you may need to put some holes in it so excess water can drain out, because you run the risk of water building up in the bottom where the top of the soil looks dry, but the bottom 4 or 6 inches are just a bog.
It's flooding the roots.
And it's flooding the roots and killing them from the lack of oxygen and the roots rotting. And so no matter what container you're using, you want drainage in there. When you're using cement and especially terracotta or clay, the water evaporates slowly out the sides. They will retain salt, and so you still need to be careful. But if you're going to go to the effort to buy a container to grow flowers or vegetables in, just buy one with some drainage holes in the bottom.
All right. Anything else specific they need to watch out for?
There are. There's two, fertilizer and the size of the container. And so if you get behind on fertilizing, it is really hard to pull those plants out from looking unhealthy and being unproductive. And so you need to keep up with either a liquid fertilizer like Miracle-Gro, or there's several other brands out there, Osmocote, or competing similar products. You don't want to get behind on your fertilization. And then especially when you're growing vegetables, if you find a container that you think it looks big enough, double the size.
Oh.
Because it's amazing the volume of roots a plant can grow. And because there's a limited root space, you need to keep up on that fertilizer. And so if you're growing a standard, like let's say you're growing a celebrity tomato, then you're going to want at least 5 gallons of soil volume for that one tomato.
Okay, and you can find a complete article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. I'm going to have Michelle pinned to the top of that page as well, one of the videos that we've done on container gardening. But you can find all of our videos. We have a YouTube channel, KSL Greenhouse on YouTube. We have some great videos on container gardening. Coming back, we have our calls lined up. We have texters waiting as well. We'll take your calls and questions coming up next. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, answering your calls and questions. And our next texter in line wanted to know, Ton, what would be some good ground cover and herbaceous plants for a food forest garden in Orem?
Well, there aren't really ground covers specifically grown to be edible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess depending on how creative or...
What about thyme?
Thyme... That would be one if they had sun that mm-hmm. they could use. There are differences between the creeping thyme and woolly thyme and the herb. And so maybe lemon thyme would be something they could do, or the herb. But lemon thyme would fill in and be something useful. The Mahonia we mentioned earlier today has those edible berries, but, you know.
There aren't very many, huh?
Hard to process. And so herbaceous plants, I think they need to focus on the herbs that are going to be the most useful, because there aren't perennials really that have edible fruit on them that die to the ground every year. I mean, they maybe strawberries are another one that they could use for a ground cover. They would not be very productive if they weren't maintained and you were taking out any plant over 3 years old, but strawberries might be another option.
All right. Steve has been waiting very patiently in Kaysville. Good morning, Steve. What was your question this morning?
Hey, I have a question. I have a prairie fire crabapple tree. I actually have two of them. One of them, around the base of the trunk, sending up all kinds of shooters, and it's been doing that for a few years. Is there any way to take care of that?
Just keep cutting them down. There are some products that you can get from local garden centers that have, one of them is called Sucker Stopper, and I think another one's called like Sucker Eliminator, but they are partially effective. You cut the suckers down and then spray them, and they are not supposed to come back from that point, but they could have come up on the other side of the tree. And so it's still a little bit of cat and mouse, but they will slow them down.
Okay, because I've been trimming them back for years, and I'm just tired of it. And the other one on the other side, it doesn't do it at all. So I'm not sure exactly what the
because those trees are grafted onto a rootstock, sometimes they don't completely take, or there may be just a little bit of incompatibility. And when you have either of those things happen, the rootstock will try to send up the sucker sprouts.
Okay, so root stopper. Just paint that on it or spray on it.
Spray it on there. Yeah, Sucker Stopper is what it's called.
Oh, Sucker Stopper. Yep. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Steve, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, they get grub damage every year. What should they apply? When should they apply the treatment?
Soon. So it's late. Actually, sometime, our weather's a little cool, but over the next couple of weeks, I would put it down. If they use one that has imidacloprid in it, they may need to reapply in mid to late July. If they use Scott's Grub X, they should only have to apply once.
All right. Denny is on the line in Marie. Good morning, Denny. What was your question? Okay, Denny, we can't hear you. We're going to give you a second while I take another question. Next person needs to lay some sod in some areas in their lawn. What kind of grass should they get, and where do they get it?
Well, if they're doing sod, they're going to be limited usually to, say, a Kentucky bluegrass mix, because that's 99% of the time what they have. But there are sod companies. I know Chanshare up in the Box Elder County area has one that's about 30% more drought hardy than standard Kentucky bluegrass. I suspect other sod companies will have something similar. If they wanted to use seed, they could maybe do something like turf type tall fescue and grow it out, and it's going to use slightly less water than standard turf.
All right. Let me try Denny again. Good morning, Denny. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead. What was your question?
My question is, we've got a couple of things going on with our peach tree. First of all, when is the time to be worried about or treat peach tree borer?
Mid-June, mid-July, mid-August, and mid-September.
Very good.
You would
okay.
spray with
yeah.
something containing permethrin. There okay. is a spray that I think is just called Pet and Garden or Garden and Farm spray from High Yield. They keep changing the name. I think the latest one was Garden and Farm, but that should be registered. And you spray it thoroughly on the trunk, especially around the base, monthly.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing is we have two peach trees, an early peach and a later peach. Our early peach, I'm noticing it almost looks like fire blight. It's kind of strange looking with some of the leaves look like they've dropped off. I don't know if it was because of our hailstorm or what, but I'm kind of concerned about that different look.
Without seeing pictures, it's really hard to say. It's rare that peaches would get fire blight. I've heard of it, and it is expressed very differently than in apples and pears, but because the peach is also in the rose family, there is a slight possibility. I mean, other things that would do that would be Cytospora canker, to where you would maybe see some gumming and then the leaves on that branch would just die.
What's the treatment for that?
Cut it, just prune it out.
Put it out?
Yeah, prune it out.
Oh, prune it out. Prune yeah. those areas out. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'll take a little closer look at that. And so fire blight on peach trees is rare then, is that
it's
right?
It's almost unheard of.
Almost unheard of. Oh, that gives me a little at ease. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, Denny, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, Tom, is there a Christmas tree type tree, Christmas tree, Yeah, that's a little redundant. Sorry. Christmas tree type tree that they can plant that grows only like 7 feet and it's on the softer side. They live in Springville.
Not really. I mean, anything that even it might say 7 feet and it's eventually going to get bigger. And so big tuna mugo, there's actually a few mugo pines. Tannenbaum is another one. If we're sticking with that Christmas theme, a tannenbaum mugo pine. There are some, bristlecone pines that will stay smaller, but they need to get to the garden centers now because a lot of times the garden centers only have 5 or 10 of these and they're gone for the year. Alpine Gardens may have something. They specialize in these types of conifers, and then also Progressive does.
All right. Carol is on the line in Centerville. Good morning, Carol. What was your question this morning?
Beautiful peonies, and they all got powdery mildew, and I'm wondering if I can plant new peonies in the same place.
Well, you can, because powdery mildew is an airborne disease, but they may also get powdery mildew.
Oh. Is there anything to prevent that?
You can try spraying, starting in mid-August when temperatures start to cool. You could try some preventative sprays to see. But eventually the peonies are probably going to get it. But if it's mid-September, it doesn't matter. They'll come back and be just fine. But if they get it in mid-June, then it's a different story.
I see. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, make sure and just water them from the base, and that will help. Overhead sprinklers spread powdery mildew. But otherwise, if it's just in late summer and fall, I'm not too worried about it.
Okay.
All right, Carol.
I will do that.
Thanks
I appreciate your help.
Next listener, Ton, says, is it too late to plant a bare root apricot tree if they can find one?
No, it's not too late. They might check Costco or Sam's Club and some of the local garden centers and see what they can find.
All right. So many calls and questions. It's great to see everyone wide awake and ready to garden. We're going to take a break. Come back following the news. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. I feel like I've taken on speed talking today, Ton, because there are so many calls and questions. I want to get to everything, and I find myself talking faster and faster to make sure I can get the question in. Next question, when is the best time to spray fruit trees, and what is the recommended spray?
Too much information to give out, but my answer is subscribe to the USU Extension Fruit Tree Updates. And if you just do a search online, USU Fruit Update subscription, they're free, and they'll tell you down to the day what you need to do. You can also download what's called the Home Orchard Pest Management Guide, and this is a book. It's just a PDF that you can just open up to pears or plums or whatever, and it will tell you, by bud development about diseases and things and then the pests. And so both of those are excellent resources because fruit tree care isn't the same for every species. And that's why I'm not just saying do this, 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 and this, because it's just so different for the different trees. And so these two resources will take care of you.
I need to give a big shout out to the Weber State dance team. One of our texters telling us that they won the gold medal at the ICU Worlds in Florida, and they're returning to the airport at 9:30 on Sunday.
I think Weber State won hip hop, and there was one other, and then they were grand champions in a couple of categories.
Congratulations to them. That's awesome.
Utah has some of the premier cheerleading and drill squads in the country, in the world. And a lot of times if you watch Dancing with the Stars or So You Think You Can Dance, many times the winners are from Utah because our university dance programs and even our private studios are literally among the best in the world.
Yeah, Dave says BYU also did the same thing.
Yes, BYU won. And so there's actually a lot of our cheer squads at the college level have international students that come from Germany, Australia, and different places to be on those squads so that they can go home and
you just don't know
compete.
About plants and pesticides.
Well,
and
this is some,
you
my daughter was into
now.
This for
okay,
a while.
Just,
and
we're off track.
Yeah, we're off track. But this is one of those tangents I had to delve into at one point. And then if you watch, you know, a lot of this information I actually get from KSL.com or KSL News Radio, just to absorb it. But
we need to recognize
yeah,
them. So
got to be proud of
our
local
teams.
Universities. UVU's had some national championships. BYU and Weber State are all premier programs.
You know, you've missed somebody now that you started listing. That's all I'm going to say. Linda is on the line in Downey, Idaho. Good morning, Linda. What was your
Welcome
question this
Welcome to
morning?
Cheerleader Talk.
Okay. I have, and I'm not sure of the pronunciation. I think the potentilla bushes.
Yeah, potentilla.
Okay. They start to bloom, start to blossom, and then something eats or whatever stops them from blooming. What is this?
It could be heat.
What do I do?
They mainly just bloom in the spring when the temperatures are below 85. And even
right.
if it says ever blooming, they're not. As soon as we're in the 90s, they stop blooming. So that could be a lot of it. I've not heard of any insects that get in there mm-hmm. and eat the blooms.
Okay, I didn't know whether I had aphids or something in the
no.
last couple of summers.
You
which
could.
Has been the worst. It's
you
been
could.
Too hot, probably.
But, I mean, if the you'd know you have aphids if the leaves are sticky.
Oh, okay.
And if the leaves are not sticky, then it's not the aphids. But if you have a lot of curling leaves, it could be residual lawn weed killer damage from 2,4-D or especially dicamba.
Okay, I'm wondering if it is the heat because it's only happened the last 2 or 3 years. In the middle of the summer, it gets really hot.
Yeah,
so
and that would slow them down. And this, the condition of the plants, the description on the call screener said curling leaves. That
okay,
has
now this
a,
is on my snowbush.
Snowbush, okay. And that probably would be aphids. The snowball bushes are terribly susceptible to aphids.
Okay, so what I've tried different sprays. It kind of helps, but not really. What is the best thing
the
to do?
The systemic is the best thing you can do. So as soon as the bush is done blooming, then uh-huh. you, because you're trying to protect pollinators, you get a systemic from a local garden center and just mix it up according to, it'll, I think it'll tell you according to the bush size, and you just pour it okay. around the roots, and with a month it'll last a year. But if you do that annually after the bush is done blooming, your aphid problems will go away.
Okay, so just get this and pour it around the roots.
You mix it in a bucket and pour it around the roots. Yep.
Okay, what could you give me some what's
there's several brands of- Fertilome has a systemic, okay. BioAdvanced has one, and there's a few others out there, but at the garden centers, Fertilome and BioAdvanced are probably going to be the main okay. brands.
All right.
And then after they bloom, then just pour it around the roots.
Yep. Yep, just
All
pour
right.
it around the roots.
Thanks
right, thank
for your
you so
call
much.
This morning. Dave in American Fork is wondering, he wants to plant a redbud tree, and he's wondering if there's the best variety and do they have any issues?
They are sometimes a little harder to establish. When I worked in the nursery industry, per capita or per tree sold, per unit sold, we had a higher return rate on red buds than almost any other tree. And 70 or 80% of them did well, but it's just that we had a higher, that's just getting them established is a little harder. And so after a couple of years, they're fine. And then if you want to plant one, you definitely can. But I think the biggest challenge is because they're a taprooted tree, that when that taproot gets severed, it takes them a few years to really reestablish.
And the best variety? Is
whatever you can find. Forest pansy or just if you want standard redbud, that's what most people have. There are some weeping redbuds. There's some red leaf redbuds. But especially the red leafed ones seem to be a bit more sensitive.
Okay. Next listener says they traveled through Gunlock Reservoir Canyon in Washington County. Has a major infestation of tent worms in the trees and shrubs. What do people do if they get tent worms? They're wondering, what do they do to get rid of these?
Probably another name is tent caterpillar and okay. a systemic, or you, if they're here and there, you can just knock them out of the tree, but you have to do something before they form that little nest they've got. Every once in a while, they're a problem, but if you see two or three in a tree, you literally can just prune that section of branch out and get rid of them.
Okay, Lois is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, Lois.
Hi. I planted, well, I have a step facing west, and on one side of it, I had a beautiful burning bush, but it kind of died about 3 years ago when we had a bad winter. Anyway, and so I planted a butterfly bush, and it just hasn't grown. It's like it's about 5 inches above the ground. And on the other side of my step, I have a lovely butterfly bush. Do I need to take that one out and try again?
I would try another butterfly bush and take that one out. If it's being watered equally, it may have a disease in the roots that isn't killing it, but it's not allowing it to thrive.
Okay. And what bushes, shrubbery, would be good for a north side of my house?
Lots. Do you have deer problems at all?
No.
Okay, good.
Not at all.
So euonymus, Japanese euonymus, there's several kinds. English laurels, or sometimes they're called cherry laurels. There's a variety. Otto lichens or dwarf English laurel are really beautiful. Photinia is another one. That I'm giving you broadleaf evergreen shrubs. These are the areas
yeah,
that
great.
Do better. And so the photinias get pretty big, but they may work too. But I think the most popular are the Otto lichens laurels, the Japanese euonymus, or the dwarf cherry laurel.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for your show. I love you and Maria.
Oh, thanks so much, Lois. Thanks for listening this morning. Next listener, Tan, says they have two zelkovas in their front yard. The leaves on one of the trees are smaller than the other. And they're wondering if you think fertilizer might help.
Maybe. There's a lot of things that go on. Zelkovas, if they get too drought stressed, get a lot of dead wood in the canopy. But if they're just not growing, it would depend on the variety, too, because if they're village green or green vase and they're not growing 18 inches a year, then you've got a problem. But if they're wireless or city sprite, you know, a foot a year, 6 inches a year may be what they do. And so a lot's going to depend on the variety. But if you need to fertilize them, I would do it today if we can get some more rainstorms or just soon so that you can maximize the growth.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back with the final segment of the show. We have people lined up, so I'm not going to give the phone lines because I don't think we'll get to any more calls or questions than we already have. We'll be right back. Thank you for spending your Saturday with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning. We have a lot of listeners this morning very excited about gardening, asking questions. Let's get right to it. The next texter says, their neighbor swears by azomite in her vegetable garden. What is your opinion and how should they apply it, if you recommend?
Azomite is a product that has a lot of soil micronutrients in it. And if you test your soil and find that you're deficient in micronutrients, it would be a product you could use.
Okay. And then just follow directions.
Follow directions.
All right. Brian is on the line in Ogden. Good morning, Brian. What was your question?
Well, I kind of have two questions, but the main question I called about was that I have this really lush green lawn, but a few years back I was having some trouble with my sprinklers and it left some little drier patches, and in those drier patches, and it's spreading now, is some wild grasses have been growing up through, and they have wider blades of grass, and they grow a little faster, so after I mow, a few days later, they're a little taller than the rest. Is there a way to get rid of that?
Just Roundup or a glyphosate product and replant those areas with seed or sod.
The problem is it's really... I'll kill the rest of my healthy good grass around it, too.
Yep.
So is there a way to,
Nope. Well, let me tell you this. You can let it grow up taller and try a wicking wand. And it looks like a hockey stick with a sponge on the bottom. And you fill it, according to instructions, with Roundup, and you brush the tips of the taller grass and not getting it on your Kentucky bluegrass. But anywhere that this weedy grass has filled in thick enough that there's no Kentucky bluegrass, you are still going to have dead spots.
Okay. So I tried that in my own little way last week, and I don't think it did any good. I used a little. Anyway, my next question is, I have a chocolate maple looking, it's pretty large. It's probably 30 feet high. And I'm noticing that it's got some growths on the trunk, like looks like tumors. And just this year, I've been noticing a lot of mushroom growth around the roots of that, like within about one or two, three feet away from the root ball. Is that tree a goner, or is it, how can I tell?
You know, it may not be. It's the tree ages. It is one that you could assess, have an arborist come in and assess the trunk health. There's some things they can do, but even with some cankers, they can live for years and years. But if you're getting a lot of mushroom growth around the base, then you may have an internal rot disease and those mushrooms are expressing. And so I think your best bet is to have a certified arborist assess the tree health.
All right. Next listener is wondering, is kudzu a good edible ground cover?
No, it is not. It is incredibly invasive. I would never plant it. And even if it's unintentional and you didn't know about it, you probably should go stand in the corner for a half hour and think about what you've asked. I'm just kidding. You know, I'm not meaning any shame or anything, but don't ever plant kudzu in any circumstance.
Okay. Craig is in Sandy. Good morning, Craig. What was your question?
I have a peony that I planted 8 to 10 years ago and it's never bloomed. It's on the south exposure of the house. It has sun from in the morning till about 1 o'clock and then shade after that. What can I do to get a bloom out of it?
Let it grow, see what happens. And if you don't get any this year, I would dig it. If the foliage is beautiful, it may have been planted too deeply. And so this fall, I would dig it and divide it and then just download some instructions on transplanting peonies or dividing them and make sure that the little nodes are just right at ground level. But that would be the best thing.
All right. Next listener is asking how to keep mold from forming on the soil in their potted plants in their house.
Let the soil dry out between irrigations so that it's not bone dry, but when it's pretty dry, the mold won't grow.
I'm going to live dangerously. Mike, we just have a minute to answer your question. What was your question this morning?
I live in a complex and they've got grow boxes. And I was going to grow, use a couple of the grow boxes this year, and the landlord had put chips along the top of it about a half inch to an inch deep on the top layer. Is that good or bad?
It doesn't matter. Just scooch them apart and then plant in the soil itself, and that would be what I would do.
All right, Mike. Sorry, we don't have more time. Just a few seconds left here in the program, and it's going to be tough to be doing some gardening out there today, but I'm going to even try, believe it or not.
It is. You can dig a hole. You might get just a little bit wet. The soil's great for planting right now.
Okay. Is it a great day to put down fertilizer or anything like
yes.
that?
Yes. Anything you can do, as long as it's not raining and ruining it, you're good.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today for the KSL Greenhouse. If you go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, you can check out all of our topics. We have a video on container gardening, and you can always find us at kslpodcast.com. Have a great day.